This lecture, 100 Years of Kwatyu Koronaty Lodge by Colin Dyer, is the first of 20 lectures supplied to members of Kwatyu Koronaty Correspondence Circle on audio cassette in 1989. Worshipful Brother Don Ray, the preceptor of the Linford Lodge of Research, was given permission for the transcription and including on the Linford website in July 2021. Copyright of the audio material is retained by Kwatyu Koronaty Correspondence Circle.
At the 1986 general meeting of the Kwatyu Koronaty Correspondence Circle, over 13,000 were entitled to attend. That is a measure of 100 years of history. Any fool or lunatic fringe group can start something, but keeping it going to that measure of success for 100 years is quite another matter. Naturally, we paid tribute to those who started the venture, but let us look also at those vital members who have contributed so much to putting Kwatyu Koronaty where it is, at the forefront still of Masonic research. It was early found in this lodge that someone had to take responsibility for getting things done. What had to be done? Well, the organization of meetings with suitable papers to be presented, the actual running of the lodge as a Masonic lodge. Within a short time, the arrangement for the editing, printing, and publishing of the transactions, and the getting together of a group of semi-interested people who would buy and even read the transactions. This last was the correspondence circle. The lodge had no money. The formation expenses were met by a gift, and the regalia was borrowed for nearly a year. Yet all the things that I have mentioned cost money. Printing, postage, clerical assistance, and so on. 100 years ago, a lodge treasurer took no part in the mundane affairs of raising money and spending it. His duty was the actual custody of the funds, the looking after, the security, disbursed only after proper authority. The raising and collection of the money, the accounting and bookkeeping, and such financial planning as was done, all fell on the lodge secretary. All the other matters that I have mentioned also all fell on the lodge secretary. Not intentionally, for it was always believed that the duties should be spread over the interested members, but on the principle that has been basic through all generations, ashes to ashes and dust to dust. If no one else does it, the secretary must. And he did, thank God, or Kwatyu Koronaty would not still be here. His name was George William Speth. Fortunately, of independent means, living in Ramsgate in Kent, with a wife and 2 daughters. He was small of stature and quiet of speech. For an independent report of a talk given by him stated that he could not be heard beyond the second row, but he was a beaver, and a willing beaver. He suffered the fate of all those who work conscientiously and well for the good of an organization. For the members woke up one day and realized that the secretary was virtually running the party, as he had to in order to keep things going. And they then complained that he was autocratic. They paid him at first £100 a year and told him to pay all the office expenses, including clerical assistance, out of that. It was raised to £200 soon after. They then started to publish extra books, with the editing, selling, and transport and storage problems which that entailed, including more collection of money and accounting for it. And they started a library, which soon reached 3,000 volumes, which he actually stored, along with the unsold books and the back numbers of the transactions, in his own home in Ramsgate. And in case he should fiddle, they engaged a professional accountant as auditor. But they neglected to take any concrete decisions on important matters, such as engaging a room in London as an office and library. For 15 years, George Speth managed the affairs of the lodge, with his daughter keeping the books and his home as office and store. Do you wonder that he had a heart attack and died at the age of 53? His death caused chaos. But his 15 years as secretary did many things. He started and developed the correspondence circle, which from scratch had reached 3,000 worldwide by the time that he died. He managed what was a small business successfully, and without such a man, the lodge could not have prospered, or even probably remained in being. Above all, he set an almost impossible example for future secretaries to follow. A secretary, bookkeeper accountant, financial planner and advisor, researcher in his own right, for Speth contributed several good papers to the lodge, and so was able to judge the quality of contributions and to coerce others into producing them. Skill at editing. Intimate knowledge of the printing trade. Administrative ability to run a staff and office, and to write letters and answer questions. But that was what the lodge required to keep going. And the 5 years interregnum after Speth died, with shilly-shallying over finding a permanent successor, proved it. Harry Rylands tried to cope part-time, but the circle membership dropped, there was often a shortage of contributions, and the collection of money got behind to provide financial problems. The life of the lodge depended on finding a paragon as nearly as possible in the mould of Speth, a situation which has always existed in Quattro Coronati. To succeed Speth, ultimately, a professional secretary was found, and an interest in research grafted onto him during a trial period. William John Songhurst came at the age of 45, first as librarian and assistant secretary, and then, having been persuaded to produce a suitable paper, from 1906 as a full member and full-time secretary. He remained in office for 22 years and then served another 10 as treasurer with regular attendance at the office. Songhurst was a careful administrator with a capacity for planning ahead, and he saw the lodge through the difficulties of the 1914-18 war and several changes of office accommodation. It was he who got the lodge into number 27 Great Queen Street. His long period of control continued, in a lower key, what Speth had established. Most of the attributes which Speth had shown were required were found in Songhurst, and the lodge prospered well under his guidance. For with him it was guidance rather than leadership. He had not quite the sales ability, nor perhaps quite the adaptability of his predecessor, for although he tried hard, there was never the substantial increase in circle membership which one feels the lodge might have had immediately following the First War. While he failed to read the financial danger signs of those difficult years following that war. But he did, as the center point of an organization, keep it going in the right direction for 20 years and more, until it was over 40 years old. He established a committed staff in Miss Johnson, who served the lodge from 1920 to 1952, and he made proper arrangements for an acceptable successor in the person of Lionel Vibart, with whom he had contracted a considerable friendship, and whom he persuaded to move house from Bath to London to take over the post. After 1928, the next 23 years represented for the lodge a constant and seemingly losing battle against adversity, finishing with the suggestion in 1951 that the lodge should close down and the warrant be handed in. The advent of Vibart as secretary had virtually coincided with the international crash of 1929. Depressed conditions came in its wake. This was followed by war and by several years of restrictions while the country was recovering. Vibart and Songhurst worked virtually in double harness through the 1930s, gradually losing ground in the fight to keep up the numbers of correspondence circle members and facing continual financial stringency. Vibart was suddenly, in 1938, stricken with fatal illness, and within a few months neither he nor Songhurst were with us. It had been hoped that Herbert Poole, a full member since 1923 and a schoolmaster, might have been able to give time to the lodge. He had, in 1938, moved to Horsham in Sussex from the north of England, and he was in his 50s. But it was not possible. Colonel Frank Rickard, a retired artillery officer aged 65, took on the post and held matters together through the war. By the end of the war, he was 72, and not looking for long to go on doing a job which was going to be much more demanding in post-war conditions. He coped with all that could be done during that difficult time, and the lodge came through intact, although it has been said that had there not been a change of secretary in 1948, the correspondence circle, the lifeblood of the Quattro Coronate movement, might have suffered very much. By that time, Poole, now 62, was available, and he became secretary. His attitude, just what was required to rekindle interest in the conditions which prevailed after the war. He was more sympathetic to those needing help and advice in research matters, and he enthusiastically started a campaign to improve the membership of the circle, which he did, to the effect of increasing it by 25% over the short period of 3 years that he was secretary. John Dashwood, a retired tea planter aged 62, ultimately agreed to become secretary following the sudden death of Herbert Poole early in 1951. This was a period of rising prices, and so increased costs. And in the turmoil of the war years and its aftermath, perhaps too little attention had been paid by those not business trained to the likelihood of financial problems. With a sudden and very late notification of a big increase in printing prices, Dashwood found that he had inherited a secretaryship of a lodge which was virtually bankrupt and in serious danger of not being able to continue. Dashwood himself was not a strong leader, but he had, as one of his first jobs, to recruit new office staff, as Miss Johnson was retiring after 32 years. In this, he was successful. The crisis was weathered, and a basis laid for a considerable further increase in circle membership. Dashwood, like his three immediate predecessors, contributed materially to the transactions of the lodge, but the period of his secretaryship is most marked by the laying of the financial foundations on which the present nature of the lodge, and particularly of the correspondence circle, have been built. During the 10 years he held office, the membership increased from just over 2,500 to 4,000, some 60%, while the business side, assisted by this, made a series of surpluses, so that from a virtually bankrupt situation in 1951, when he died suddenly in 1961, there was a material reserve in hand. He made changes in the method of administering the lodge, which helped to produce these results, and which followed through to build on them for another 15 years and more. When Dashwood died, there was again a search for a secretary. Ultimately, Harry Carr, who had just been elected treasurer, undertook to rearrange his business commitments to enable him to give the necessary time to the office. Harry Carr was a successful businessman. He had a record of very creditable research. He felt he had a complete commitment to Quattro Coronati. He had the success achieved during Dashwood's time to build on, and he inherited Dashwood's staff. All this was a formula for success, and that was what was achieved. If Speth's commitment and industry and flair had placed the future of this lodge in virtually an impregnable position, here was a comparable man who could carry it to very great heights indeed, which he proceeded to do. He had one great advantage over Speth. He was a compelling and persuasive speaker. During his time, he developed the publishing side of the business successfully and profitably. His judgment of research papers and the help he gave to those starting out in the field both redounded to the great advantage of the lodge. His recruiting efforts for the circle carried the numbers from 4,000 in 1961 to nearly 12,500 when he gave up 12 years later. This, combined with his readiness to undertake speaking engagement and to answer inquiries on all Masonic aspects, carried the name of Quattro Coronati Lodge into a new dimension. Some thought even into the dangerous position of becoming an authority looked to above Grand Lodges. I don't think that Harry Carr, who was essentially a modest man, ever realized the full effect of his words and pronouncements. But there is no doubt at all that whatever his predecessors may have done to promote the lodge, it was his work which placed it firmly in the position it holds today, when other organizations which were proud to compete in the research field have found it impossible to maintain the standards once set, while Quattro Coronati have succeeded in doing that, or even improving on them. Much of this is due to the work of Harry Carr. As in the case of Speth, there came a time when there was some internal sniping of Harry Carr, so that his period as secretary ended on not too happy a note. For a year, Roy Wells was master and editor, and for another, secretary and editor. But on medical advice, he gave up the post. Cyril Batham became secretary when Harry Carr resigned, then treasurer for a year, then secretary again until the centenary. So much of misfortune has happened since 1973 that it is as well that such misfortune seems to run off Cyril Batham like the proverbial water off a duck's back. The formation of the Correspondence Circle Company, of which for some years he was also secretary, meant a division of responsibility between Lodge Committee and Company Council, and trying to keep both happy. The late 1970s saw rates of inflation such have not been experienced for certainly two centuries. This threw up problems of costs and subscription rates, causing frequent change in arrangements and occasionally horrific losses. Problems in the printing trade reflected on the editor's ability to get out the transactions on time, and also caused more than one change of printer. Costs of staff and an inability in times of fuller employment to find adequate staff at a reasonable price added a severe burden to his life, resulting ultimately through the death in office of the bookkeeper in virtual financial chaos. His responsibility for decisions was not so great in some fields with the advent of the company, but all in all, the last dozen years running up to the centenary have been probably the most prolonged period of continuous difficulty in that 100 years history. Yet we have had meetings, some in provincial centres, papers and other contributions, and a service has been maintained which kept the Lodge in the position it was so proudly put by Harry Carr. And that is not to detract from Cyril Baytham's achievement when I mention Harry Carr. It is to congratulate him on doing the impossible. To have been the man who had, in the long run, to follow Harry Carr and bear the comparisons, and who hands over a Lodge for its second 100 years to a series of successors. The Lodge is in good heart and a going concern as he finishes his stint. May his successors carry the torch with the pride and selfless commitment shown by those I have mentioned. Truly is the 100 years history of this Lodge bound up with those who have served it through the years in this most important of all offices, that of Secretary.